Okay. Welcome again, everyone. We have someone join us. Who's on the line, please?
This is Kim Boswell and Kathleen McGee from Department of Rehabilitation Services.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the Communications Sector Conference Call.
Thanks.
The minutes were distributed, I believe, from the February 12th call. Does everyone recall seeing those?
I have not seen those.
I haven't either.
So did anyone receive minutes?
I believe that I did, Andy. This is Sharon.
Sharon,
I'm going back to check the folder.
All right. We'll see that those minutes from the February call get redistributed, since it seems that I'll ask Dekenya to redistribute those since she has the list. Sharon, do you know of any, in looking over that, do you see anything that we need to re-elaborate?
I'm looking in the folder. I thought I remember getting them. It must be from another conference call that I'm recalling
I'll see that those get out then. Is there old business anyone would like to bring up at this time? Hearing no old business, we'll move to new business. Who is new to the call for this? This being the first time that they participated in the communication sector.
Mitch Edwards with the Department of Education. This is the first time I've participated in the call.
Okay. Thank you very much for participating. The purpose of this sector group is to identify the potential outlets for information and to craft messages to share with the general public through these outlets concerning the preparation for and prospects of and so forth pandemic influenza. Has Matthew made it to the conference call yet?
I just spoke to him on my cell phone, Andy,
yeah.
And he said he didn't get the info, and I just gave it to him, and he's dialing in right now.
Okay. Very good.
Would you like for me to kind of give a preview about what Matthew's going to talk about?
Yes, please do.
Okay. This is Sharon Tinsley from the Alabama Broadcasters Association, and we're working on a project with a company called Global Security Systems. Is that you, Matthew?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I was just giving them kind of an introduction of what we're doing together.
Okay.
So Matthew works for Global Security Systems, and they've developed some technology that they've put in place in Mississippi after Katrina. As you are all well aware, satellite phones failed in many cases. Cell service was out because of either overload on the system or towers down. And primarily first responders had great difficulty communicating with each other, not to mention that the general public couldn't communicate. And so these guys have developed some technology that works with the FM subcarrier that FM radio stations have and that in most cases is not being used. If in your car, if you have a radio that allows you to see the song titles and the call letters, that's coming across a subcarrier frequency from the FM station you're listening to. And so this technology allows for an encoder and a decoder, just like our current emergency alert system, but instead of relying on electricity and everything else to get out, if the signal can get to the radio tower, then it's almost uninterruptible. And so I'm going to let Matthew pick up from there.
Matthew, welcome to the conference call. This is Andy Rux at the University of Alabama, Birmingham.
Good. Thank you very much. Yeah, just to add on to what Sharon said, what we found out, in fact, I'm at an FCC hearing today. They're evaluating commercial mobile devices, and it's interesting because it's all part of the WARN Act, which is the warning and alert. The federal government's, put a lot of attention into how they're going to solve this big problem of alerting people, not only based on geographic data, but also, millions of people at the same time. And then be able to provide targeted or addressable data that alleviates a lot of this confusion and just basic alerting that doesn't occur. So what we've done is we've come up, as Sharon mentioned, we've basically used a technology that's been around for 20 years. We used this technology for radio paging 20 years ago, and we've had a relationship with broadcasters over that time period. And what's happened, we retooled the technology to provide that addressability and that geo-targeting. And also in the meantime, the receiver chips that are required, two things have happened. One is the price of that chip is becoming insignificant to the point that, number two, that all of the mobile providers and a lot of the MP3 players and personal devices, we'll call it, have put the chip in as just another feature, and that chip is capable of receiving our alert signals. And we're seeing upwards of 300 million of those chips being delivered this year to support, you know, not just FM broadcast reception, but also alerting signals too. So it's a very attractive technology because it's point to multipoint. The broadcasters, you know, it's the only broadcast centric. I don't know, Chairman, if I'm speaking out of school, tell me, but I think it's the only broadcast centric technology that leverages, you know, all their experience in emergencies since 1954. They've been involved with emergency alerting. And it's, you know, emergencies are local and broadcasters are local, and we've seen that as a fairly good marriage. So if you have any specific questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
We talked about this in a smaller group after the meeting last week. The alert system that Public Health has in place now is great for putting out preliminary information, information to mitigate risk, and works great in that capacity. But this is a system that will, you know, that works in times of emergency as a great communicator. And you know, I mentioned Katrina, and the thought here was, you know, well, what I don't want everybody to think is, well, that's great for storms and tornadoes and whatever. But the fact that communicating emergency information with people about staying in place or sheltering in place, even if an outbreak became that bad, but just to share emergency information that can be passed down to the device about if their doctor's office is open in a community, or if you have these symptoms, stay in your home. If you have these symptoms, go to a hospital, or there is vaccine available at this location. Mm-hmm. So those kinds of specific pieces of information can be pushed down this pipeline across these devices and FM subcarriers. And we're working with the EMA right now in the state to try to get their endorsement and get them to spend the money to put these into either county or regional EMA facilities. But I wanted everybody on this call to hear about it because it has great application for first responders and for public health.
Well, just I want to add a couple other things. One is that it's multilingual. So, and what happens is that each person that has a device or addressable device, it's like a little alarm clock. The price point is very reasonable. If we can send multilingual messages to those devices, and we're really targeting like folks that don't have communication. You know, everyone has a communication device of some sort, but a lot of people don't. Lower income.
Elderly.
And elderly don't have, you know, they really rely on radio, but it's not, you know, or they rely on some, you know, someone to tell them basically to take care of them. They don't usually have a computer, internet connection. They don't usually have a cell phone. I'm talking about, you know, the majority. And then the other thing is that, you know, what we found out is that in Mississippi, where we have the system statewide now and it's been adopted, is that the health department over there is looking to use it because they can actually identify people based on the profiles, simple profile, so they can drive people that say that have diabetes to where to get the insulin, you know, people that any type of disease, you know, where you can go to the pharmacies that are open. And we're really trying to, you know, basically enable the health departments and the pharmacies and the doctors to be part of the first responder team.
This is Jim. I have a question for this. We did discuss this last week, and I appreciate the additional information. I had a question based on our conversation already. I am familiar with the subcarrier, like on a car radio, where it visually shows you the song being sung.
Yes.
Now, this personal device, the handheld device, would this just be a visual data message, or would there be a voice over this?
Well, voice, there's like a beep, you know, it's like a beep or a chirp, something similar to what you hear out of a smoke detector. But as far as intelligible voice, there's a layer that, that allows us of technology to do that, but we're not doing that right now.
Right.
So we could migrate to that. And that, Sharon, that would be the 76. You need a little more bandwidth. So it could be done, so you could actually receive voice at that point. You know.
Right. But at this point, the proposal is for there to be a visual text message. And is there any type of limit to the amount of data that could be put through there, like in a minute or something?
Well, right now it's 128 characters. That's in line with what's typical of Amber Alerts, but that could be extended. The reason we have it, you know, because we're point to multi-point, the same message goes to everybody, so we only send that message one time. So each one of the devices has multiple groups inside of it, which basically allows them to receive different messages at different times. It's pretty complex, the addressing scheme and how that works to leverage, you know, the point-to-point, multi-point advantage. The other thing I wanted to mention is that the broadcasters are also, at the same time, they're providing an audio, you know, message, you know, that's usually could be in concert with that text message.
So the blind population will be hearing information on the radio as well.
Yeah.
One of the great things about this device is once you've put that profile in, we mentioned the people down in the Gulf Coast, if those people are evacuated from their homes and they come to Birmingham or go to Huntsville, their device would still receive the information for their neighborhood to let them know what's going on there so that they would know power's back on or that there's food and water and ice available, that sort of thing, for their own neighborhood while they're sitting in a hotel room some, you know, maybe a couple hundred, 400 miles away. One of the great things about this device is, as we've talked about in our smaller groups, is the language barriers that we have to overcome in the state, particularly in that part of the state. And you might be asking yourselves, well, why are you telling us about this? Well, we like your support in getting it rolled out across the state, and one of the things that we're really going to need is to get the device into people's hands. Either the device that I showed a few folks in the meeting the other day that, like Matthew said, looks like a small travel alarm clock, or to make sure that people have the chip in their cell phones or PDAs or whatever mobile device that they carry. We want to get these into the hands of the population. They're going to put the receivers into some stations up in Birmingham and Anniston, I think, as a pilot program. And we're trying to, I guess, pull the EMA along so that they can see how effective the plan can be. But when they rolled this out in Mississippi, the Council on Aging put out, what, Matthew, 5,000 devices?
Yeah, through a grant.
Yeah, the Council on Aging got grant money and gave 5,000 devices to senior citizens along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. So we'll be looking for your help in those sorts of things to get to the many multi-languages across the state, and then also to other special populations, the blind and the seniors.
Matthew, this is Andy Rucks. I have a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
One, what's the cost of the device for a person, for an individual?
Well, if it's the alarm clock is roughly, in quantity, it'll vary between $25 and $40.
Okay,
it's a one-time, and this phone, it basically, you have to buy the phone, but it has the chip inside of it, so that would be, you know, whatever the phone cost.
So, Matthew, would you ask a provider when you're, like, I just went and bought a new mobile device over the weekend, should I have asked them about a certain kind of chip?
Well, that's funny you ask, because the meeting we're at, this is more than a meeting, it's based on the Warnack bill, which is done by Senator DeMint. That's what they're discussing today, actually, is they're basically putting in a bill or a law that says that the cell phone manufacturers have to provide a mechanism to provide alerts through their systems. The problem is they don't have the bandwidth to do it. So they've got a little bit of a problem. And that's what we're discussing that here at this, there's about 40 people here, about how they're going to do that. They didn't solve that problem. That's why we've gone with the other problem with that is that you can't easily, if your battery, you don't have a battery. You can't buy a BlackBerry battery at Walgreens, for example, but you can buy a AA battery, which is what our device uses. So the other thing I want to point out, too, is that device, as it travels throughout the state or throughout the region, you continue to receive messages. It's a true mobile device because we're putting up all of the FM stations in the United States. That's the goal. And then that's why we went to the State Broadcast Association, because they have a relationship with all the broadcasters in Alabama.
Matthew, how do you distribute the message to the FM stations?
It's all satellite backbone.
All satellite backbone. So
yeah.
Once you submit the message, it goes to all broadcasters at the same time.
That's right.
So any broadcaster that has one of these receiving devices and retransmit it can do so regardless of where you're located.
That's right.
And there are a couple of pluses to that. One is that it kind of bypasses any human touch at the stations. It goes to the station and immediately goes down the subcarrier. There's no human intervention. Nobody has to push a button to send it out. It happens automatically. So it goes out through unattended stations, and there's no room for human error there. And the second is that if, let's say it was some kind of natural disaster and a radio tower went down, then the device automatically scans for the next frequency.
Is there any cost to the station for providing the service?
No.
Nope. It's a one-time. That's what everybody loves about it. Basically, there's a one-time, there's a cost associated with us setting it up, but it's a one-time setup cost. And then after that, there's no additional recurring cost.
And what does it – how – What type of charge is that one-time charge to a station?
It varies, depends on the number of stations, depends on how many portals you want. Portals are the input devices. Because it's secure and encrypted, depends on what kind of encryption you want.
And this cost is for the folks putting the encoder in then, the people who put the devices in, who create the messages. And in this case, we're talking about EMA offices. Then there's not a cost for the stations. And then as Matthew said, there's the one-time cost of a device. So it's not like a pager or something that you're paying a monthly fee on. You buy the device, and then you just keep the batteries up.
Yeah, we have one that also plugs in the wall, too, so because we're doing outfitting FEMA trailers in the coast of Mississippi right now, and they've requested that we provide power to it all the time, which is not a problem. The other thing what I wanted to mention is the way we approach it in Mississippi, and actually we're approaching it in all the states, is we really – because this is eligible for Homeland Security dollars and UASI dollars, we're getting funding through all these different types of federal sources and actually in state. But in Mississippi, what we're trying to do is get the state to actually put up what we call a framework system based with their state Homeland Security dollars, and then everyone else can kind of take advantage of that system. They only put up the system once. But then everybody else can buy a portal or buy receivers, based on their needs. And because you, as a health department, you would manage your own database, or you could work with emergency management to do that. So you'd have your own ability, your ability to send a message as you wish, because you'd have access to all your addresses that were signed up on your network. So if it's public health officials, it's kind of like a private network.
All right. Any questions for Matthew? We appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking the time. Take care. Have a good day.
Thank you. Sharon, thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Certainly. Well, we'll be looking for your support to get to special populations in the state.
Okay. Sharon, were you at the advisory committee meeting on last week?
I was.
Were there any issues that we needed to discuss that were brought up? I was not there. I was conducting a school closing exercise in Mobile.
That's right. Well, we were tasked with talking about how to reach out into the business population in the state. And all the sectors were asked to discuss that topic. And as the communications sector, we discussed a couple of things we talked about on our last phone call, and that was reaching out through the Alabama Council of Association Executives to either have someone try to address that group. And I just got the email for their April meeting. They do lunch and learns. They have great turnout at these things. I went to last week's meeting, and there were 115 people there. 115 executives representing different business types, business genres across the state. And so the last speaker was Kay Ivey. The next speaker is Beth Chapman, Secretary of State. And this might be a way to get someone from the Health Department on their agenda to talk to these association executives and then start pushing information down to businesses of all kinds. I mean, from cattlemen to retailers, to push down through these associations as a way of distributing information to them in their work environment, and then also to get to those people and actually maybe even arrange to speak to their individual groups. Also at the meeting, we didn't discuss it in our group, but someone mentioned the Business Council of Alabama, and that's another route to do the same thing.
Very good. Very good. Any questions about the advisory committee and reaching out to the business community? I think that's a very good opportunity. We do need to have more of those. I've received a request over the weekend from someone I know at Protective Life Corporation that wants some information for their preparedness committee. They've formed one in the company, and they're wanting some preparedness information. So I'm going to correspond with them and see what they're seeking. But we need opportunities to reach out like this.
Jim was also in that meeting. Jim, did I leave anything out?
No, I think you've covered it pretty well.
All right. Thank you very much. Any additional new business anyone would like to take up? Hearing none, our next call is scheduled for April the 9th. And, again, it's at 10 o'clock in the morning. We'll follow a similar format that we had today. Any announcements anyone may have? All right. Thank you, everyone, for participating today, and we'll look forward to talking with you next month.
Thanks.
I'll see that the minutes from the February 12th and the minutes from today's meeting are produced and distributed.
Thank you.
Thank you.